This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis. And we're currently waiting for our special guest today, Kat K. Coy Kez. And she is the first, well, she's Botswana's first openly trans-identifying public figure. Sadly, she's got caught in traffic, so hopefully she's speeding her way here now. Okay. While we're waiting for Kat to arrive, I just want to tell you about something exciting that we've got coming up for Vectis, which is a celebration of 7 years of Vectis Radio. And it's a musical evening with one of the bands all washed up and the Meteors, and that'll be at the Tank Museum in Northwood on March the 11th at 8 p.m. There'll be a licensed bar, and all the money will go to help buy our push our way into FM, because we've got the funds, we just need to keep raising money. And it's £5 for a really good night out. So Tank Museum, Northwood, March the 11th, 8 p.m. Please come and bring a crowd, because I think it's going to be a really, really good evening. Okay, and I'm delighted to tell you that Kat has just sashayed into the studio. Welcome, Kat.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm absolutely wonderful.
Okay, now just relax, because I know what the traffic's like in Newport. It's probably been hideous.
I don't know where everyone on the island is going.
Well, they'd probably come to see you.
Probably.
Yeah, but they just didn't know we were on radio.
Yeah.
You look fabulous. So for those of you who, obviously, who are on radio, so you can't see, but Kat is looking really gorgeous. Is that a turban? Would you describe that?
It's a head wrap. And it's funny, because I was thinking this morning about how kind of obsessed I'm becoming with the style of wrapping, which is popular in Nigeria. So it's called a gele.
Okay.
And it's about the layering of it.
It's very beautiful. And is that authentic fabric?
This is authentic Kente cloth.
Ah, yes. Lovely. And have you got many pieces of that?
A few.
Yeah. So yeah. Presumably it looks like a lot. You can use it as a wrap or a sarong.
You can do everything
in all manner.
Yeah.
If you know how. If,
yeah.
Unless you're like me, in which case just wrap it round poorly, then take a step and it all falls off.
Well, I should come back to the island and give an entire lecture series on workshops. What you can do with 2 meters of fabric.
We all need to know. And you could do it on Ride Beach, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Or Seaview, because you weren't there yesterday.
Summer, yeah. During the summer.
How did you find Seaview?
It was great. It was absolutely lovely.
It's very beautiful there, isn't it?
A lot of people walking their dogs in the late afternoon. So
this is the Isle of Dogs. Yes. They love a dog. Love a dog on the islands. Yeah, I'm more of a cat girl. I'm allergic to dogs. I like dogs, but no, everybody.
Actually allergic to dogs, or is that? Yeah,
no, truthfully, Kat. Okay. No, you're not doubting my word. We've only just met.
I'm not doubting your word, but you.
And
you might just really not like dogs.
No, I do love them. I love all animals, okay. But I am allergic to them.
I'm sorry.
Asthma, you know, can't breathe, that kind of thing, you know. Not just a small rash.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking death.
Legit. with the animal.
And I know you're having, you know, you've had, what have you been here on the island, a week?
No, I got here on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, Tuesday afternoon.
And when you're off, is it tomorrow?
On Sunday.
Ah, oh, lovely. So
late,
I know you haven't had
well.
The best of weather, but how are you finding our lovely island?
I love the weather. I'm one of those weather optimists. I brought shoes that could manage all types of weather, so I don't have to worry about my shoes getting soaked or anything. It hasn't rained, which more often than not ruins a few things, like, you know, what you can wear, what kind of jacket you can wear. You have to wear the waterproof one as opposed to
I can't imagine that you own a waterproof jacket. You don't seem
don't.
Like the sort of girl that would have a pack-a-mac about her person.
I have an umbrella. But I don't have a waterproof jacket, so that's another thing as well. But yeah, it's been absolutely lovely. The people are, there are more people than I thought were on the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a few familiar faces, but I've also seen quite a lot of new faces, and took a few turns around to discover places that are hidden away.
Yes.
You'd kind of think, you see town centre and you'd think that's where everything is, but no, I've found that there are nice little cafes around different corners and gorgeous gardens as well, even in this wintry weather.
Oh, it's lots to discover. It's a real little hidden gem, isn't it? Because
yeah.
I'm writing, I know you were born in Botswana, but you live in London now?
I'm currently living in London,
yeah. Whereabouts
yes.
are you?
I'm living in Abbey Wood, which a lot of people in London don't know where that is.
But East London?
It's, yes, South East London.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Just across the road from Kent.
I
what
know.
Is technically Kent, so we're in Greater London. Mm. Yeah,
I was taken there years ago, and my abiding
what,
memory.
Kent or?
No, Abbey Wood. Uh-huh. One of my mother's friends lived there. And we lived in Ealing, which is way, as you know, the other side. That's West London, we're the other side of town. So we made this tremendous hike across town, and by public transport, hideous. You know, I'm talking over 50 years ago, and her husband was a sewage worker.
Uh-huh.
So he took us to this sewage farm. That was deemed a day out in 1965. Suitable for children. And he was delighted. You know, he gave us the full tour. And what I can remember, what stuck in my mind, was the tomato plants that were growing.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, you probably don't need too much.
What kind of relationship do you have with tomatoes?
Well, good question. She served them up for tea, Kat.
Oh.
So with our ham salad, with the lettuce, cucumber and obligatory tomato. And I thought, no, I'm just going to leave that on the side of the plate. And then I think my mum was doing that thing that mums do, you know, kind of nudging you, don't
eat
be rude.
Eat it.
But yeah, and no, I'm fine because the Isle of Wight tomatoes are absolutely beautiful. I don't know if you've been able to try our tiny little tomatoes.
No, so I'm allergic to, I can't have raw fruits and vegetables.
Oh, you see, so it's not just me and dogs,
is it? This is the first time I've actually said it on radio.
Okay.
Yes.
So what happens?
I sort of, my throat constricts.
Oh, nasty.
Stop being able to
EpiPen?
Breathe. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think that calls for an EpiPen.
Save your life with, you know.
Quick jab, definitely.
A good old jab.
Okay, now, I introduced you when you weren't here, but I was getting people warmed up to the fact that you are Botswana's first openly trans-identifying public figure. What does that mean for you?
It means quite a lot of things. And last week, exactly a week ago, an article went live on True Africa, which is a website that's London-based but broadcasts news about African news and people from Africa in the diaspora. To have gotten that title, you know, and it's not a title that you walk around and you walk into a room and everybody introduces you as such.
No.
But it's sort of a thing of saying, why did I, at a very young, I guess, age, get into that position? How did I get to the point where I was able to be not only the first openly trans identifying public figure, because I don't claim to be Botswana's first openly trans person, because I'm not.
No.
I knew a lot of people before that. But it was the pressures or the realization that we don't have our own sorts of role models. We don't have anybody who's got a story that we can say, well, I believe in that, but I don't believe in this portion, and I haven't experienced that. So what validates me as a trans person, or what doesn't? What validates me but isn't part of your story? So how do we differentiate these stories? And that's really why I decided to take... I said this in the article, or I said it in the one that's coming out today. So it was a two-part memoir series. In the one that comes out today, which covers my teen to early adulthood years, is about taking my private into the public. Because the public found out way after a lot of people who knew me, who I cared about, knew this. And so it was saying, how do I then start negotiating my public spaces with everybody else, as opposed to just being myself as I am at home and letting whoever in public questions my story the way, letting them question it as they would.
Yes.
And not being overly concerned with what they could say.
Because I should say at this point, you're, I mean, you describe yourself as an artivist, so through your art, you do social justice work, don't you? And you're a performer. So you are very much on the stage in a bigger stage, aren't you? So you're taking that message out there to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just going back to something you said earlier, how do you cope with what perhaps is best described as people's fascination with you? Because you came in here, you're very tall, you're very slender, so you've got model girl looks, very beautiful. So people must look at you and think, she's gorgeous. And then just, you know, how does that make you feel when perhaps they've got questions? Do you openly want to approach them and explain things to them, or do you think, you know, you can just work it out yourself? Or how do you feel?
Well, I mean, it's also one of those things that I've spoken about, is that I thankfully have a history of queer theory studies. I've worked and learnt theories, I've learnt practice, I've listened to people's stories, and I am inherently an educator. So I give my time to educating people. But what most people get from me, you don't necessarily get from anybody else.
Mm.
So it's, say for example, I usually say to people, if you're not a natural blonde, how often do you tell, if somebody comes to you and says, oh, so what product do you use? How often do you do your roots? All these things. If you're not comfortable saying it, you either go on the defensive or you just say, actually, no, it's fine. No, thank you. Go to Google or ask someone else.
Yeah.
Or you end up with somebody who, like most often happens with me, I take people into gender 101. I take people into sexuality 101.
Now, what does that mean for people listening? What does gender 101 mean?
The very, very basics of sort of unlearning. Because we need to unlearn in order to cultivate space to discover more, right? So it's saying, if you say it must be hard to be you, for example, and there's what people always have a lead in.
Do they say that to you often? Is that a comment you hear a lot?
You get that, you know, you get, oh, you're so brave. And it's, well, am I brave for accepting the fact that I'm alive?
Being you. Are you brave for being you?
Yeah. Am I brave for being alive? Mm. You know, and because often does somebody say to you, you're brave for...
I mean, you actually, one of your quotes is, to be trans, black, under 30 and still alive is unnecessarily a miracle in our world these days. Mm. And I picked that out of something I read about you because that really pulled me up sharp.
Yeah.
And made me think. And I thought, actually, that's true. That's a very... deep, you know, that's there's a huge truth in that, horrific truth in that.
Mm. I mean, even one thing that's come into my scope of knowledge from, you know, being in London is to be a 16-year-old, a 16-year-old young male in London is really it's a gift nowadays, because the kids are stabbing each other left, right and center, and parents are losing children who, for when you get to about, you know, 14, 15, you kind of think, okay, here's where the really tough part of the journey begins, because we've invested in you, but you're also becoming this adult and all the other dreams that you couldn't expect of a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, start becoming, they come closer to reach. And when you lose that life, how do you come back and say, you know, well, we could have another one, or can we have another one? Do we want to have another one? Do we want to? How do you carry on?
I think that would, you know, it would just destroy you, wouldn't it? I mean, totally. And obviously, people do go on to rebuild their lives, but they're utterly changed, aren't they?
And yeah, and 15 years is a long period of time. And as you asked me about, you know, people's fascination with me, that taking it from the private into the public, it's... I know that when I put myself into the public, I will either become a benchmark for people, or I become that thing that everybody uses as a cop-out, because then you've got that reference. And it's been part of my work to say, these references, a lot of the references we have are from everywhere outside of where we are. So you've got kids in, or people in the United Kingdom, who would define themselves according to American references, as opposed to British or English or Irish or Welsh references, because they don't have access to those stories. And it is a popularity game. And if you don't put yourself... if there's nothing available for you to hold on to, then you can't actually tell your story.
So do you put yourself out there? You've read a lot about you. And it's all, you know, it's very positive and good, and people tend to fall in love with you a little bit, don't they?
Thank you.
You know, I've heard that you're a kind of lovely person inside and out, and you come across as very warm and very approachable. So is that also something you like to promote, a side of you like to promote in order to encourage conversation and communication?
You know, it is me. And unfortunately, being, you know, warm and approachable and lovable sometimes becomes your very undoing as well, because people then think they can do whatever, or yes, people also think then you're strengthless, because we're told that to be strong is to not be those things. To be kind is to be weak.
I think that's so interesting, because that's nothing to do with gender, is it? That's just a commonality, yeah, isn't it, between across us all, that one can, you know, my mum was used to say, you know, don't be too nice, you could be too nice, and I used to, you know, I thought, what are you talking about, how can you possibly be too nice or too loving?
Yeah,
but I see she, you know, she had quite a hard time of it, and she, that was her way of protecting herself, you know, was to tell herself not to be too nice, but she was always too nice and was always trodden upon and abused, yeah, in quite a lot of ways. So a lot of what you put out there, I think, is speaking for many groups of disaffected people, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's very easy to, if all, and as I will say this a number of times, is that, you know, the stories that you have to hold on to, the things that you have access to, if the whole story is you must be angry in order to, if all you see makes you angry, then you start protecting yourself more than you should. And in that responsibility, in the labor of always walking out of your house and saying, okay, we will come back home today. And I will not need, I will stay away from, if somebody is getting to the point of ticking me off, I'll walk away, or, okay, let's do it. Let's go fight. Let's get to war. And there are people who, people carry weapons that are not necessarily physical weapons, not guns, not knives, but you carry these weapons that you're always prepared to use, mm, and we don't recognize it.
So what's, you know, living in London, what's the worst situation you've been confronted with?
Oh, I had somebody got in my space, when I was on a night bus heading home after a karaoke evening, and it was really quite a shock, you know. It was having been in London for 3 or 4 months, and just knowing that, yes, there it isn't, you know, any safer than anywhere else around the world, but not expecting to be violated, mm, because you don't want to then think, okay, I must always have my guard up.
That's a pretty basic wish, isn't it? You know, yes, I'm going to leave my front door and, like you say, come home safe without having been violated,
yeah,
while I was out doing the shopping. You know, that's so basic.
Yeah.
Yet I can hear what you're saying, that clearly this is often uppermost in your mind.
Mm. And you sort of, I mean, I think I was 3 or 4 stops away, mm, from getting off the bus. And it was as this gentleman, well, this person, this man, was getting off the bus that he hovered right next to my ear, said something, and then went off the bus. And I just thought to myself, you could have just made it off the bus and been angry outside.
But
there was something in you that made you want to prove that you could be dangerous to me. And now you don't understand what you've done to me,
mm,
but you also don't understand what you may have done to yourself,
mm,
because you don't know who I am. And it's that whole,
true,
it's a power play. I say a number of times, I think I've written about this as well, is that the headline of, you know, trans serial killer, we don't have that, or we haven't had that. But we've had multiple stories of trans people being killed. And it's because the power play has always been, you know, trans people are there, they're much like ducks. They're sitting ducks, spot one, kill one, everything is fine. And I'm like, well, actually, anything you can do, somebody else can do. And trans people are just like everybody else.
Mm.
So it's funny that earlier today I was listening to Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better from And You Got Your Gun. And it is that thing of, don't think that I am weak,
no,
but also don't expect me to be violent.
No, exactly. So you're not advocating violence, but you're advocating a response.
Yeah.
that is equal to what they're doing, but without the violence.
Well,
but
it's a more educated
response.
Yeah, it's a be respectful of the fact that you are both sharing this space. You are both on a journey of life.
But when you encounter people like that, I mean, I can only imagine that those people are operating from a position of supreme ignorance and fear of the unknown.
Mm.
And something they don't understand. So something in their psyche is saying, you know, this needs to be eradicated and eliminated. And I don't understand that, but that's all I can imagine, that the way they think, that this is, you know, something they cannot identify with. And if it's eradicated, it ceased to exist and problem solved. But of course, as we know, that's not the case.
Yeah.
But it must, I don't know how you can, how do you rationalize that when you go home and you think about that experience that you had, does it make you more cautious the next time you leave home?
Well, I've said before, a lot of the work that I do is because there's a 10-year-old out there who is the 10-year-old me.
Mm-hmm.
And the 10-year-old me never had a me to look up to or a me to have as a reference. So if I stop now, what happens to that 10-year-old? But also, it comes back to another thing that, for me, it's not just one moment that makes your life.
No.
Moments affect your life, but you must always come back and say, but what am I about?
But sadly, some of those, and they can be brief, but as brief as, you know, like you say, a moment, can't they, in time of your entire life, that one moment or that one comment or that one look.
Mm.
Can affect you forever.
Mm.
And it stays with you. And I think you've got to be incredibly strong to be able to negotiate and navigate around that in order to be true to yourself and not allow that to damage you. Something so seemingly small and insignificant. But like you say, that hotly whispered words to you on the bus, I can picture that.
Mm.
And I can also see him leaping off that platform and running away, the coward that he was, and leaving you there with this hot sort of horror in your head to deal with.
But I mean, so one of the other, I've been involved with the Botswana Botho Compassion Movement, and had the honor of receiving the Compassion Torch during the Compassion Torch Relay, the International Compassion Torch Relay, for Botswana. And what I've learned through the compassion movement has always been to say, no matter what I might be going through, somebody else might be going through something more, or I don't know how you woke up,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know how I woke
Absolutely.
Up. And so how can I be of the best service to myself, but also to you? You know, if I put myself in your shoes without saying I must stop walking in mine, what happens to our lives? If I give you care, could I then trigger you to go and care for somebody else?
That's the hope, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we had these bracelets, which were two different colors on either side. And so you wake up in the morning with the black side up, and every time you do an act of compassion, you flip it over. And so people would receive compassion without knowing that you're doing it to just trigger yourself into creating this habit. And I went from wearing my bracelet every day and turning it to not needing to wear it, because I would turn it 10 times, 20 times, 50 times a day, because you see how many opportunities there are to be kind to people. Whereas we always try and focus, and we tend to go towards the struggle, the pain, because that is what then fuels us to overcome, to survive. And I'm just like, let's stop surviving our lives, but also understand that there are people who are surviving. So even with the show, you know, AfriQueer Now, it's to say, what are the stories that aren't available to young African queers? What are the stories about African queers that are not available to people? And how do we put those into the public realm for discussion, or just for it to be known that there are people that are not hungry, starving, dying, and going to war. Mm. There are happy people, there are sad people, there are anxious people, much like anywhere else around the world. But we don't hear those stories. So who's going to tell the stories? People can't hear the stories if nobody's telling the stories. And if
they've also got to want to listen, though, haven't they?
Definitely. Kat? But you need to cultivate that. Mm. You can't expect people to immediately start listening if it's something that they don't want to listen to.
Exactly, yeah. And tonight, well, I hope everybody will be listening to you because you're doing a show at Ride with Upper Trent School.
Yes, so I'm doing a show at Ride School at 7:30, and it is the piece Afriqueer Now, which debuted in New York last year at a festival, well, at a conference called Performing the World, and it was an academic entry point to artistic practice and to storytelling, as well as the social justice element of storytelling.
So can anybody go? Is it open?
It's open to the public. It's completely free, and we are collecting a donation at the end of the show, and all the proceeds from those donations will go to a ride-based charity.
Okay. So, and is it a one-woman show?
It's a one-hander.
Okie dokie. And what can we expect? Songs or
it's
poems?
It's storytelling, it's poetry, it's physical theatre, it's some music in there. But it's, yeah, it's an experience. It's a tour across the African continent.
Wow, sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, and are you wearing a special costume?
No, well, if you've seen the artwork, you've seen all the costume.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that sounds very intriguing. Okay, so people get along to Ride School tonight, 7:30, completely free.
Yeah.
So they can see you, talk to you after the show, presumably.
Yes, part of the way that I work is to open dialogue spaces.
Brilliant.
So there is the performance part of it, and then we have a Q&A afterwards. And it's not about, you know, ask the question and Kat has the answer. It's there are questions, there are answers. If Kat doesn't have the answer, then somebody might have the answer, or we will communally work towards the answer. In the way that I work, I genuinely believe in communication. I believe in dialogue. I believe that we must always say what we don't know.
Okay.
And if we don't discover, then we have nowhere to go further.
Brilliant. And there's no age range, is there? It's anybody can turn up.
Anybody can come. There are no obscenities that are stated.
Brilliant. Okay, pleased to hear it. So we're going to go to a very quick break, but please stay tuned because we're coming back with Kat and we're going to find out so much more about this wonderful woman. And I just know that this hour is not going to be long enough, is it? I can already see that. Already see that. We've only just scratched the surface. And she's going back to London on Sunday. So anyway, we're going to talk very fast after the break. Thank you.
Putting the community back into local radio. This is Vectis Radio.
VectisRadio.com.
For the people, by the people.
Hello to Wit Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and the lovely Kat K. Koi Kez. I have said that right, haven't I?
Oh, it's an L. Kat Kai Kol Kez.
Ah, okie dokie. And what's that short for?
It's not short for anything.
No?
It is.
That's, it is what it is.
It's Kat Kai Kol Kez.
I love it. Yeah. Say it again. Go on.
Kat Kai Kol Kez.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's lovely.
Thank you.
That's lovely. I did practice that and I thought I got that right.
It's fine.
I knew.
It's absolutely. It's lovely hearing people's interpretations.
Mess it up.
I have now two different sorts of groups of people. They're the people who just refer to me as Kat Kai. Mm. And then I've got the people who just refer to me as Kol Kez. So they split it into.
What do you prefer?
Just Kat.
Kat, yeah, good. Really? Good. That yeah. Suits me, as you can imagine. You've got the measure of
and
me.
And I am, the matriarch of the Kol Kez Empire, so it is.
Talking of being the matriarch, your own mother. Tell me about your mum.
My mother is the best person in the world. Honestly, there is no. I think I'm going to start crying on air.
I hope she's listening, because she can get this in Botswana.
I will definitely share it with her. Yeah. But, you know, my mother's been. She's been a silent but also a very, very prominent figure in my life. And I'll, you know, in the article that you referenced earlier, where I talk about becoming Botswana's first openly trans public figure, there was a whole therapeutic session that needed to happen with my mother.
Of course.
For yeah. us to say, okay, we are going to send you to the wolves, essentially.
You know, at what age were you when that happened?
I was 25 going on to 26.
And
I think I wanted to do it before my 26th birthday. And I'm currently 29.
Yeah.
So...
This is quite recent in your life, isn't it, that this has happened.
But it was after a lot of observed life. You know, so my father passed away when I was 8. And for our life and the sort of relationship that my mom and I have had has always been about supporting each other. It's always been about love. There's never been a moment in our conversations, in our interactions, where "I love you" was never mentioned.
Mm. When you're quoted, you say all we need is love, and you want to make that an international law, don't you?
Yeah. You know, and so that idea of always having somebody there whose life I genuinely treasure, and I don't know how my mother does it, how she's done it, but she is. She's been everything from, you know, a farmer's daughter to being an accountant to being my cheerleader to traveling wherever she needed to go, to facing her fears, to losing the love of her life, but also enjoying and never stopping supporting everybody else.
So how did she support you through your journey to become Cat?
Just by being herself. It's been as simple as that. And I think...
What were the words, you know, because there may be, I'm sure there are people listening who are experiencing something similar, perhaps with their own children, and really are perhaps struggling to know how to cope with it. So what lessons perhaps could they pick up from your mother? What would you suggest is a way forward for them?
You know, I think in terms of an example, so to go back to that question where you said, you know, the way I've been described, is it just a performance? If you were to meet anybody and ask them about my mother, that was pretty much the description you would get, if not more. And it's because she's raised me with love, kindness, self-respect, respect others, dignity, as the things that we do. And so when she needed help to understand how to cope with when her life changed, she sought it from people that she loved, people she respected. And for me to get my uncle to call me, and for me getting a call from my uncle early in the morning, him saying, you know, your mother told us, and we just wanted to let you know that we are here for you, we're here for her as well. And essentially, as parents, we can't expect you to be anything or anyone that you aren't, because then you're not going to live a happy life. And I knew that those were the words that my mother and my uncle had processed together. She needed to find her peer to then help her figure out how to say it. Because that's another thing that I try and teach people, is intergenerational communication and dialogue is necessary. But we also need to acknowledge that sometimes you need to just talk to somebody who's been through the things that you've been through.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you were very lucky to have a mother like you had, and like you say, for her to find somebody who could understand and help her and support both of you. But obviously there are children out there now who aren't that lucky, and maybe they're the son or the daughter of that type of guy who spoke to you so rudely on the bus. What advice would you give that child who is struggling to talk to that parent?
There's no stock advice, and I'm very cautious of giving solutions, right? Mm-hmm. Because, as you said, every single context is different. But the "it gets better" story is truth. It does get better. It doesn't stop being difficult, but it does get better. But it's about what and when and where better is.
Mm-hmm. And often we've seen, it's a point you can't define until that point has long perhaps been and gone, isn't it? And
it's all retrospect, yes. Because one of the characters in AfriQueer Now brings up an issue that we rarely hear about, which is the migration of queer people to spaces where we think or they think are better
safe.
To be, safer safe. To be, you know. And so it was really quite shocking for me to receive an email from a friend of mine in Botswana to say, listen, I've been seeing some of the statuses that you've put up. And the way that I curate my Facebook wall is it is a space for education, mm-hmm. but it's also a means of you knowing and keeping in touch with where I am as a, you know, public person. And I understand that certain experiences that I have will resonate with people. So I could have kept that as just a private thing. It happened. I went home. I dealt with it, and we moved on from that. But I knew that it needed, for me, it needed to be put out there. So that it's not just, oh, Cat's life is all rainbow and sunshines and radio yes, interviews absolutely. And all the sorts of
yes,
things.
Of course. You
can't escalate to a point where you are immune to abuse.
No.
And so for those kids, it's to say, listen, you might see the sunshine and roses, and we can say, I've made it through. But even after making it through, the stronger you become, the stronger your opposing forces become as well. And it's always you needing to say, today is yet another day.
Yeah.
And
it's a process,
keep going.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You are continuing to make it through each day.
Yeah.
As we all are.
I've said to the students on the island over the past few days, are you a journey or are you a destination? Mm. And when you are the destination, what is the destination? When will you know that you've reached it?
Mm.
And these are questions we don't ask ourselves. We don't question what our journey really, really is. Because we think that in arriving somewhere, everything else falls into place and the world doesn't change. And, you know,
I thought arriving at 58 would be, I would have, everything would fall into place. But let me tell you, Kat, it doesn't. And you're half my age, so, you know, you catch up on this one.
Well, I will. We'll have a powwow and figure out everything.
Something very serious subject that I wanted to get you on that I think is probably very important to you and very important to a lot of people listening. Is that you say here, you openly say that you've struggled with periods of self-doubt, self-loathing, and that's led to self-harm. I was so sad when I read that. I don't like to think of anybody having to go through that. But there seems to be so much of that now, and we seem to be so aware that people feel this way. Mm. And they literally bear those scars on their arms, and it's just, what on earth's going on? Why are we in this situation? What's to be done?
We've been in this situation for a very long time, you know, and it's interesting to see those who are sort of famed for the way they harmed themselves. And then you also see the people who are put down for that, the same act.
Yes, indeed.
You know, so you look at, We sort of think, oh, so rock star died of an overdose. Oh, well, it was expected, mm-hmm. right? But then when somebody like Robin Williams commits suicide and the world says, wait, he was such a lively, bubbly, hyper-talented artist, comedian, performer, how could we not have known that this was all going on in his life? And it's because we've also stopped creating those spaces of communal compassion, but also communication.
So who reached out to you when you felt like that?
I sort of invoked the voice of my mother and everything. And I know that sounds...
No, it makes perfect sense.
But it was this whole thing of like, listen, there's a human being who is out there and without a shadow of a doubt, loves you. No matter what. No matter what you've both been through, you can... What would it be to her? What would it be to you? What would you do? Why would you hurt yourself more than you... Why would you hurt yourself knowing that that would actually end up hurting her?
Absolutely. You know? So you bring yourself back from the brink because of, you know, you don't want to hurt your mother and you know how absolutely devastated she would be.
But even more than that, just, you know, not wanting to hurt my mother, it's... What... Who am I? You know,
but what did you do in that moment, Kat? You felt that terrible feeling of gloom and, you know, darkness, and then you thought, no, I can't do this because of my mum, it would hurt her so much. Then what did you do? Because I know people, again, are going to be listening who are in this situation right now. Mm. And just to hear how you coped, what did you do in that moment?
You know, it's been more than once. That's another thing. You know,
it's ongoing, can't it?
I say to people that during my university years, I literally timed when I could have my mental breakdowns. I would let all the stress, all the anxiety, all of these things build up and have a weekend when I would break down and just...
By breakdown?
Hash it out. Do all the crying that needed to happen. Watch all the sad movies that I needed, right? And the thing is, what each person has different triggers. Mm-hmm. So... We situate our traumas in very different spaces. So this, I was watching a documentary yesterday where a teacher who had a student shot in her class was saying, you know, the post-trauma hits you at any moment. So you're driving and all of a sudden you break down into a hysterical fit.
Yeah.
But and you don't know what it is that's triggered it. Maybe it's a song that the student used to hum every day, or that was the last song that you and the student danced to. But we have different triggers, and we have to learn how to cope for ourselves. Some people cope with the drugs. Some people cope with speaking with other people. My art has helped me tremendously because it's been part of me giving it back to myself, but also realizing where the stories I wanted to tell were not always I have suffered. Because if I am just I have suffered, then when do I say, actually, we've made it beyond the suffering? And when the suffering comes again, are we ready to go into it?
And get through it. That is part of life, isn't it? You have these wonderful moments and then the dark days that you hope and pray behind you. And then, as you say, this trigger can come quite a long way down the path and you think, didn't see that one coming. Mm. And you're almost back or twice as bad as you were before with it.
And we try and hold ourselves sometimes to this idea of, you've come through this before, why can't you get through it again? And when you do realize those moments of, but this is a different fight.
Mm.
I am a different person. Fighting myself when I was 13, for example, was much easier because then the rebellion might be staying out a little bit later than I should have stayed out. Or it might be walking 2 kilometers instead of 1 kilometer away from home only to come back. Just so that, you know, I wouldn't be in that home space and be asked what is going on, right? There was a point where, and I think it's still now a thing, for me, where I can't cry if somebody is seeing me cry, no matter how affected I am. Because that whole relationship of, you know, tears equal weakness. But I'm like, well, my body needs to purge this.
Yes.
And it needs to purge this in the form of tears. And so I need to get them out and get this through my body.
It's like laughter, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the same.
You know, and so then you have the more you hold it in, the more it essentially just becomes something bigger that you aren't prepared to handle.
My mother always used to say to me, let it go, let it do, and do this sort of motion with a hand across the head, you know, let it go, let it go. And I thought, you know, you can let things go, you're that sort of, I can't. And if I try to, then it's suppressed, 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 and then bang, mm-hmm. you know, off it, far worse than yeah. if I just dealt with it in the moment.
Yeah.
There we go, that's me. But I think it's, you have come, I hate to use this journey, but you've had an incredible journey, haven't you? And you are still travelling it. You're a young woman. So what's next for Kat?
Next is graduating with a master's degree from Goldsmiths University.
In what?
In human rights, culture and okay. social justice. So I was fortunate enough to be named a 2016-2017 Chevening Scholar.
Wow.
As one of nine from Botswana.
Fantastic.
Which also sort of, I think, makes me the first trans-identifying Chevening Scholar from Botswana. And recently I've realized that being the first is one thing for a lot of people. Some people see it as an achievement, but I see it as, why haven't there been? Why am I the first? And if I'm the first, who will be the second?
So why are you the first, in your opinion?
I don't know. I just think it's been societal barriers that we also get told or taught, right? That, you know, you can get this far, but don't dream too big.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly believe in dreaming, but I believe in dreaming that comes with working.
Absolutely.
So if anybody has seen my posts on Facebook, they'll see a hashtag that follows every single post, and it's Bereka Mosadi. And Bereka Mosadi is Setswana for work. Bereka means work, and Mosadi is woman. But also, Mosadi for me is more than just womanhood. It's womanness. And womanness is not encased in, you know, certain geographical spaces. It's not encased in certain bodies or physical features. It is something that you have as something to hold on. It's an anchor, but it's also a propeller. But it's also wings, and it is food you eat. And so Bereka Mosadi is to say, You've got stuff to do. Just do it.
Get on with it.
Do it.
Yeah, achieve it. So you've spoken a lot about your mum and other people, but what about your friendship groups? Have they been supportive? Have you moved and changed friendship groups? How does that work?
I've had two best friends for a very long time. So one of my two best friends, her name is Chipo, and Chipo and I met in primary school years ago. And then we reconnected in high school, and then reconnected again when she was, she moved to Johannesburg to start her degree. And so Chipo has been in my life and seen all the multiple, you know, movements in my life. Whereas then I've got Betsy, who's been in my life, and Betsy's been in my life through some of the spaces that Chipo never got to see. And so that relationship also created itself in a different way. But the two of them absolutely love each other. So then they know that they're not competing for me. And I know that I'm happy with them knowing each other. All the other friends that I have, and none of them are less valuable than these two, but these are the two people who I would say have, more than anybody else, heard parts of me that I never knew how to say to anybody else. They've helped me sort of flesh things out. And I'd like to think the 1,000 and something friends I have on Facebook, who of those 1,000 and something, 80% of them are people I know face to face.
That's brilliant.
And we've spoken to, and I genuinely care about, and I know what makes them happy. So I keep those, and I'm never close to having more friends. So friends are the thing that makes my world go round. But also, it's just like, a friend for me is somebody that I would genuinely do anything for. So give me love, I will give you love. Give me compassion, I will give you compassion. We call ourselves friends even if we don't speak for 2 years, even if we don't speak for 10. But when we meet, it's as though life has never stopped.
That total love and acceptance, isn't it? And that understanding of each other. And that I like that shorthand you have between friends where you say something and you almost don't need to... It's not finishing each other's sentences, but it's the meaning and the joke behind it that they just get.
Yeah.
You don't need to over-egg it and explain it when by which time you've killed the whole story.
Yeah.
They're just there with you, aren't they? Kind of metaphorically holding your hand.
And we've got that in Afriqueer now. It is... What are the things that we hold on to as people, more than just queer people, but also as queer people from the African continent, or as queer characters from the African continent? And what are the stories that we haven't yet had told? Who's heard us? And in the performance, I try and bring people in to assume that sort of best friend space.
Brilliant. So people have got a lot to look forward to this evening. So go along, see Kat strutting her stuff and giving the message. Chat to her afterwards, 7:30, Ride School this evening. I think it'll be inspiring. Thank you.
I hope so.
It's been an absolute joy to meet you.
It's
thank you so much for coming.
It's been absolutely lovely to be with you. And thank you to everyone who's been listening.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay, and thank you from me, Joan Ellis.
Oh, if I may.
Oh, we're
thank you to the island.
Oh, well, thank you for coming to the island. And like I say, we're all out of time, so I need you to come back quite soon.
I will.
Okay, thanks again. And please join me again next week and have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy the little bit of sunshine that we're getting. Okay, take care now. Bye-bye. www.vectusradio.com